Nation had a mix-up. That was everything canceled that year. Okay, well, first of all, why don't you take your Bibles and go to Matthew chapter 27. We're going to go back to a passage that we were in this morning, or at least one of the men read from this morning. And as you're turning there, I'm just going to give you kind of a brief overview. I may do this a little bit later in the week, but just I know I'm a familiar face to a number of you, and yet some I'm meeting for the first time this morning. So as Pastor said, we are the Reed family, and I'm originally from the state of Maine, so I'm here, grew up in the Northeast, grew up on the East Coast, love the East. I don't like the East's gas prices, but I do love the East. My wife grew up in Wisconsin. We got married right out of school, when I finished seminary. And for 5 years, we were based out of a church in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. And now the Lord has actually moved us to the state of Texas. And we now reside in Houston, sort of. I mean, we're on the road quite a bit, but that is our new home base. So as Pastor was saying, we were supposed to be scheduled here back in 2020, and that got canceled. And so the Lord has allowed us several times through. And we've been friends with the Madrids for years and years, and then got to know the Brubakers over the last 3 years, I would say. And so this is the first time that we've been able to be here with you for a revival meeting. Pastor mentioned at the very beginning of this time that it's really comforting to have the Lord of Harvest, the Shepherd, the Master of the Church do the leading. And sometimes he leads unusually. And tonight I think is probably going to be one of those. I have been wrestling with the Lord, and he has brought me back to this passage that some of the men read from this morning. But I am confident this is where the Lord wants us here this evening. In Matthew 27, we have the account of Jesus' crucifixion. And we read this morning, emphasizing, some of the men read the resurrection passages, but I want to take some time and I want to read through the crucifixion account, because there is a phrase in verse 51 that I believe we're supposed to park in. But before we jump to that verse, everybody's looking at verse 51. What's that verse say? Start at verse 33 with me. This is the trial is over. Jesus has been sentenced to die. Barabbas, the criminal, has been released. And that exchange right there is amazing to me, that a real live criminal was released so that a real live innocent man could be crucified and everyone was okay with it. And then in verse 33, and when they were come unto a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of a skull, they gave him vinegar to drink mixed with gall. And when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him and parted his garments, casting lots that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet. They parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots. And sitting down, they watched him there. And they set up over his head his accusation written, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then were there two thieves crucified with him, one on the right hand and the other on his left. And they that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads and saying, "Thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself, if thou be the Son of God. Come down from the cross." Likewise also the chief priests mocking him with the scribes and elders, saying, "He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him." We emphasized that a little bit this morning. How they assumed that his mission was being ruined, but it was being fulfilled. Verse 43, they continue, they say, "He trusted in God. Let him deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, I am the Son of God. The thieves also, which were crucified with him, cast the same in his teeth." So it wasn't enough to be maligned in the trial. Now those that crucified him, the ones that are crucified with him, and the religious follower, or excuse me, the religious elites, all of them are mocking him as he silently suffers on that cross. Now, from the sixth hour, there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani." That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Some of them that stood there, when they heard that, they said, "This man calleth for Elias." So misinterpretation and mistranslation is not uncommon today. It happened back then. They said, "Oh, he must be calling for Eli, Elijah." No, he was saying El, that the Hebrew word Eli, E, that suffix, that ending means my. It's possessive. So he's saying, "My El, my God." And they misunderstood it. They said, "Oh, he's calling for Elias." And so someone in verse 28, and straightway, one, or 48, excuse me, and straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. And the rest said, let be. Let us see whether Elias will come and save him." Isn't it amazing? They're constantly looking for super signs, but not the supernatural. They just want to see him do these wonders that will give them some kind of good feeling. They're looking for things that are unusual, but they're not looking for the Christ. So they're saying, no, let him suffer. Don't give him the vinegar. We want to see. Maybe something else cool is going to happen. Verse 50, Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent, and the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose and came out of the graves after his resurrection, and went into the holy city and appeared unto many. Now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared greatly, saying, "Truly, this was the Son of God." And many women were there, beholding afar off, which followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering unto him, among them which was Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's children. And when even was come, there came a rich man of Arimathea named Joseph, who also himself was Jesus' disciple. He went to Pilate and begged the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be delivered, and when Joseph had taken his body, he wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had hewn out of the rock, and he rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulchre and departed. And there was Mary Magdalene and the other Mary sitting over against the sepulchre. Now jump back, look at verse 62. Now the next day that followed, the day of this preparation, the chief priests and Pharisees came together unto Pilate, saying, "Sir, we remember that the deceiver said, while he was yet alive, 'After 3 days I will rise again.' Command therefore that the sepulchre be made sure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away and say unto the people, 'He is risen from the dead.' So the last error shall be worse than the first." Pilate said unto them, "Ye have a watch, go your way," and I love this phrase, "make it as sure as you can. Give it your best shot." So they went and made the sepulcher sure, sealing the stone, setting the watch. And chapter 28 starts that first day of the week, very early in the morning. The resurrection that we triumphed in this morning. I did think it was somewhat humorous. Jesus was the first early riser, right? So if your children rise early, they're just following in the footsteps of Jesus. But the rest of the resurrection that we talked about this morning, we're going to leave that off and just focus in on this, the crucifixion. In verse 51, as we've worked through this, the mocking, the beating, the 6 hours hanging there in a position of increased, incredible pain and asphyxiation. He would have constantly been short of breath, having to pull up on those nails to catch a breath and then back on. And for 6 hours, he lasted this way until finally, after the darkness has fallen over the earth and there's this overwhelming sense by everyone, something unusual is happening, and he cries out that final agonizing, "God, why have you rejected me?" Which is, I believe, that final moment when God, after placing the sin of the world on Jesus, God finally then turned his back on him so that Jesus could experience rejection, so that Jesus could experience separation, because that was me and you. We experienced separation. And then it was then that Christ cried out, "It is finished." And verse 51 tells us that when Jesus cried out that final tetelestai, that final "it is finished," what happened in verse 51? "And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake and the rocks rent." So I want you to think about this. Everybody close your eyes. Everybody close your eyes. This isn't the invitation yet. Just close your eyes. I want you to imagine there, as it's been light, you're watching this spectacle, and he begins to shout out, and then the world goes dark. And in the temple, whether there was priests in there or not, but suddenly there is the sound of from the top to the bottom. That wasn't very loud, but you can look up here. And a shroud that once kept man out of the presence of God. A curtain that was reserved for an area was set aside that only the high priest could go in once a year. And he went in with trepidation and fear and trembling lest he be unclean and die in the Holy of Holies, which was why they sewed bells around the bottom of his garment, lest if the people outside stop hearing the bells because of him being struck dead, they had a rope fastened to his ankle and they could literally pull him back out. There was such a fear of going into the Holy of Holies because no one could enter into the presence. And when Jesus paid for sin, top to bottom, if you were a priest and you reveled in your position as being one of the special elites, imagine the horror and the shock when what was once forbidden has now become thrown open for mere commoners. And yet that's exactly what Christ was doing. In one word, do you know what Jesus was granting? Access. The Holy of Holies was a terrifying place because it was where God's presence dwelt. And you went in fearfully. But because of Jesus' work, he grants access to the lowest and the smallest of his children, of his believers. And what does he call them to? "Because of my blood, you now ought to come boldly into the Holy of Holies." Go to Hebrews. This has been your theme passage, but I want you to first go to Hebrews 10. I want to read three different passages in Hebrews. Hebrews speaks of this much, and I don't know how much pastor has gone through Hebrews. I would guess that he has in the series that he's been leading you through, but look at Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19. "Having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way, which he hath consecrated for us through the veil," that is to say, his flesh. "And having an high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised." There's your assurance of salvation. He is faithful, that promised. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more, the more as ye see the day approaching. What is he saying? Because of Christ's blood, you have assurance. Come boldly. Go to Hebrews chapter 7 now. Hebrews 7 verse 23. And they truly were many priests, speaking in the Old Testament, because they were not suffered to continue by reason of death. The priests die, they age out, they die, they can't continue as priests. So there's been many, many priests, verse 24. But this man, because he continueth ever, hath an unchangeable priesthood. Wherefore he is able also to save them to the uttermost that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them. I quoted that this morning, or I read it this morning, because I wanted us to see, what does the resurrection do for us? It gives us a living offer. The Jesus who is alive is in the holies, making intercession for you. And it's the same Holy of Holies that he says to you, enter in boldly. Now go to Hebrews 4, your theme verse for this year. I want you to see this. Hebrews 4, verse 14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. If a believer views the throne of God now with fear, with trembling, with trepidation of entering in, with mildness and with unbelief to not enter into the Holy of Holies, then that believer has misunderstood the glory of Christ's tearing the temple curtain. He's saying, if you are a believer, there ought not be any fear in your heart. If you are a believer, there ought not be any backing up. In fact, if you're a believer, I'm calling you. If you have needs, come. You can come boldly. Okay, I'm sharing what Pastor's been sharing with you this whole time, but I want you to see that on Resurrection Sunday. And this is what I believe the Lord wants us to do. I think he wants us right now to come boldly. The only freedom that I've had for the rest of this service is I believe the Lord wants us to go to prayer. I know you came to hear preaching, but sometimes there's a better preacher than I. And he wants me to step aside so that we in the Spirit could enter together into the Holy of Holies. This is what I would like to do. We had a lot of visitors this morning. A number that, as best we know, were unsaved. And by God's grace, they heard the gospel. And even now, maybe wrestling and ruminating on it. Could we enter boldly and ask God to deliver their minds, to deliver their thinking, that the Spirit of God would convict and illumine, that they would be saved? There's also some great needs in this church body. I've known you long enough now that I know of some of the needs. There's some significant needs that sometimes we hide in the shadows amongst believers. We don't share candidly and honestly. And then when we go into the prayer closet, we even feel timid, like we're not sure if we can knock loudly. And yet Jesus granted entrance, access, and said, come boldly. So with the remainder of the time that we have, I believe the Lord wants Faith Bible Church to step into the Holy of Holies together as a body boldly. So this is what I would like to do. I think you all are familiar with a corporate prayer meeting. What we're going to do is we're just going to stay right here. We're not going to group off into little sections. We are going to be one whole, and we're going to trust the Spirit of God to lead this time. If He stirs your spirit, impresses you with a prayer, then you need to pray out, and please do pray out, and we're going to let Him direct. But this is what I would like to do. This is the format that I think the Lord wants us to take. First of all, I want us to start out by praising. I want us to start out by giving thanks for the crucifixion, for the entrance, and for the resurrection. I want us to just take a few moments to rejoice in all we've been given. And then I believe the Lord would have us to enter in and boldly ask for some miracles. The Madrids need a house. The Madrids need physical deliverance. There's other financial needs in this church. There's family challenges in this church. There's some of you, and you've even told me, you have been burdened and grieved and hurt. Your heart has been pained for someone in your family that you love. Let us go boldly. And let's ask till we are almost ashamed to ask more, because I think that's what His children are called to do. So I'm going to stay up here and I'm going to open in prayer, and let's go through that. Let's start out by praising, and let's enter into asking boldly, because that's what He gave us to do and called us to do. And then one at a time, I'll close the prayer time.